from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about why it's so difficult to change your mind, and how a new study talks about breast cancer on the rise in young women. Why would that be? And how asthma medications taken during infancy is linked to stunted growth. Also, we have the newest on patients not appreciating that if you're on a salt-free or limited diet, have you checked your medications? There's lots of sodium in there. We're going to examine turmeric and also show you why the newest study on dairy products does not support that it makes your bones stronger, and how coconut oil fights deadly yeast infections, and more. We also have a lot of different commentaries today, some that I've written and will be sharing, and some by others. We're going to hear from Chris Hedges, because when I watched a video clip of the President's State of the Union message, he kept referring to how great we were, how remarkable we were. And in some areas, we certainly are, and I would support that. But I didn't hear him talking about our limitations, our weaknesses. And one of our weaknesses is living an unsustainable fantasy. So we're going to have Chris Hedges share his thoughts on that. Also, I've heard so many times from people who are finally beginning to challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines that, gee whiz, is this something new? Meaning, are we just now having some bad vaccines? No. We've only had bad vaccines. And we're going to play you a clip from the man who tells you how bad they are. In fact, this is a clip many of you have not heard. You've heard a different clip from him, but he explains how when he looked, he found wild viruses that can cause cancer and other diseases, and he believed it was the cause of AIDS. And he actually says that in these green tree monkeys that were used for the polio vaccine. Now, they knew this. You also will hear him say he covered it up. You also hear Dr. Sabin in here talking about the danger in these vaccines. So you'll hear Dr. Hillman, Maurice Hillman, reveal some astonishing revelations. He admits that the Merck drug company vaccines, like the polio vaccine, had deliberately contaminated these vaccines with the SV40, and why they did that. And they did that from 1953 to 63. That meant that probably 100 million young Americans were then infected. So decades later, when they got cancer, nobody knew where the cancer came from. But then someone started to find the cancer also happened to have these SV40, simian virus 40. And that's where it came from. So, yes, you're going to hear from the most important person in the history of vaccines. He introduced more vaccines than any other person in American history. He invented them. That he was a part of the problem and the cover-up, but he took it all so lightly, joked about it. And you will hear that in this very rare interview before he died. Also, we're going to take a look at, if time permits, how the United States should deal with Saudi Arabia, where Congressman Hank Johnson calls out Saudi Arabia for its state-sponsored funding of Islamic extremists. Now, what's interesting, here this legislator is asking the State Department and other experts, isn't it true that Wahhabism, which is the official religion of Saudi Arabia, doesn't it promote terrorism? And then you start to see them squirming in their seats. You won't see the video, you'll hear them. But they're squirming, and they're looking at each other like, how do we answer this? Because if we say anything that looks like it's a criticism of Saudi Arabia, they could stop buying billions of dollars of our weapons and planes, and that could affect the profit. So the profit motive is more important than the human right motive. Boy, this is one of those rare occasions at a meeting that no one has broadcast. You'll hear this. Also today, my guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Sin Hang Lee. Dr. Lee, who is did his residency fellowship at Cornell New York Medical Hospital and Memorial Hospital for Cancer, and is taught at Yale and other places. He's going to talk about something you have not heard about, and this is his area of expertise, the anomalies over the safety of the human papillomavirus vaccine. And he recently received confirmatory evidence through the Freedom of Information Act that there has been a cover-up about the vaccine's dangers among high-ranking medical officials. Mind you, this is an exclusive. So here's what I'm going to ask. Right now, everyone listening, email everyone you know who has an interest in the safety and efficacy of vaccines, who may have had a child injured by the human papilloma vaccine, that we will be presenting evidence of the danger of this vaccine. The government has known it and covered it up. It'll be an exclusive on our program today. Now, also, early this morning, I watched a short clip from an English celebrity talking about what we should do with old people. And I'm going to ask you, what do you feel about this before I give you my input? Also, I watched a short clip about a young man, I'm guessing he's in his mid-20s, late-20s, talking about how his generation, young people, they're the key to the Democrats' future and Hillary's future, and he's a big Clinton supporter. He attended a lecture, Bill Clinton, in Nevada recently, but he didn't get in because he chose not to sign his information, like name, address, phone number, email address, and sign it. And he said that's really offended him and his whole generation, and that that could cost her votes, that he didn't want to give that information up. Okay, I'll take a look at that, but from a broader perspective. We have a lot to deal with. And also, for those of you who are listening over the telephone, that bandwidth has been expanded substantially to accommodate the nearly going on 20 million minutes of listening. So we have a lot of people listening over the telephone. So occasionally, when there are more people wanting to listen than can be, it changes the sound and kind of slurs it down, and we immediately notify them. So here's the number to listen to over the telephone every day, noon Eastern Standard Time, 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. Let's begin. A new study talks about, this is the University of Washington and Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, how many young women are getting breast cancer. Quote, "It's a sad, sad fact. The number of women ages 25 to 39 who are diagnosed with breast cancer is on the rise. What's even more shocking is that this number has been steadily increasing for the last 40 years. Researchers also admit, not surprisingly, that the cause is more than likely environmental. The statistics don't lie, young women and breast cancer." And they looked for 40 years, from 1946 till now. They looked in particular at cases in which breast cancer in young women had metastasized to other organs. According to the study organizers, the number of young women in the United States with metastatic cancer has risen as a little more than 2% each year. Roughly 7% of all women with breast cancer in the United States are under the age of 40, and breast cancer accounts for almost half of all cancers for women within this age group. The numbers are staggering, and most people have no idea. So, although breast cancer for women under 40 is still considered rare, tumors tend to spread more rapidly in younger women than in older women, and survival rates are lower And the issue is why. It's relatively simple. It's not that complicated. First off, we have more women drinking at a younger age, and also we have enormous amount of binge drinking in women in college. And keep in mind, it's like missing a night's sleep. Okay, so you didn't sleep the hours you needed to, and so you'll be tired the next day. You can make it up. No, you can't. When you damage the liver, okay, well, the liver rejuvenates itself. Up to 60% can be rejuvenated, so no big deal. Yes, it is a big deal, because it's not just the liver. You're also killing about a million brain cells, heart cells, kidney cells at the same time. So you cannot make that up. So you do damage at one point in life, it comes back to meet you at another point. Also today, more women have more toxins in their body than at any other time, and that means you have an accumulation of toxins, including the very almost ubiquitous amount of xenoestrogen produced toxins, and that definitely is connected with breast cancer. Beauty products, cell phone usage, radiation, smoking, all that leads to overproduction of xenoestrogens and breast cancer. Meat, eating more food out of the home that is not healthy. Commercial meats and processed foods, that tops the list. Refined carbohydrates and sugary beverages, that also correlates between toxins found in commercial foods and livestock and hormone growth in young girls. And that increases the risk of having an imbalance in the injected commercial estradiol, and that increases breast cancer risk. Stress, that increases breast cancer risk. So, what can we do about it? Don't use plastic bottles, plastic containers. Avoid all meats and hormones and antibiotics. And don't purchase any of the chemicalized household cleaning products, cosmetic products. Go 100% natural and organic. And never carry your cell phone in your bra. Use the speaker function at all times or a cord. And don't get the human papillomavirus vaccine because there's a definite risk there as well. So we know that more women are getting breast cancer, but we also know that because we do not have an intelligent, unbiased public health policy through the Surgeon General and the federal agencies, that all the commercials you see on television, in my personal opinion, if it's a food product, it causes cancer or it contributes to the body burden of being toxic. So get off the grid, eat organic, eat local, don't eat genetically engineered, drink healthy juices, take turmeric or curcumin, green tea and vitamin C, and that will help prevent cancer. From Kuopio University Hospital and University of Eastern Finland, infants given asthma medications during their first 2 years of age are likely to be stunted in later life. This is something brand new. This was presented at the European Society for Pediatric Endocrinology meeting. Inhaled corticosteroids, these are medications used to treat conditions like asthma, are frequently used in infants, and especially those that wheeze. However, these medications may have harmful effects, including reducing growth rate and making you shorter. So why would so many kids be so sick today? Vaccines in the diet. Also, a lot of people are trying to limit their salt intake. A lot of people could care less. You should, according to the University of Dundee in Scotland. They found that patients were not looking at their medications, not realizing that the medications are so high in sodium, it increased their risk of strokes and heart attack. In fact, research at the University of Dundee found that millions of patients were exceeding their recommended daily limits of sodium for medicines because of baking soda in some of these fizzy tablets. And They did this study at the University School of Medicine. High salt intakes and common medicines put patients at increased risk of cardiovascular events like blocked veins and non-fatal heart attacks and strokes. And sodium bicarbonate is a salt, and it's added to many common prescription medications, especially those which are manufactured to be soluble or effervescent to improve their absorption in the body. And so that excess salt as sodium bicarbonate, that can be a part of the problem. Also, a good study that was finally done at the University of Auckland in New Zealand to see about dairy products increasing the thickness of our bones. No, the dairy industry has been propagating this misinformation for a long time. And you've seen the milk commercials. Well, first of all, would you drink, let's say, a glass of milk from a seal or a giraffe or an elephant? No, you wouldn't. There is no reason for any human to consume any animal milk, period. We don't need it. And the mineral composition, the amino acid composition, is meant to help a baby be able to get up and run quickly and grow fast for its own survival. It's not meant for humans. This was published in the British Medical Journal and found that people do not get stronger bones by eating dairy products. And that's the study. So how do you get stronger bones? That's relatively easy, and we talk about that all the time. First, eat calcium-rich foods. Leafy green vegetables like kale and broccoli and spinach and seaweeds all are rich. And figs are good. Black currants are good. Dried cherries are good. Sesame seeds, chia seeds, flax seeds, rich source of calcium. And then garlic and onions not only contain calcium, but also contain sulfur. Also, try to get those that are rich in magnesium, because calcium and magnesium together are really terrific. And also, stay away from soft drinks. When you're drinking a phosphate-containing soft drink, like a cola, the phosphorus causes the body to excrete calcium. And high-protein diets, the animal flesh and diets, causes the body to excrete calcium. And caffeine causes the body to excrete calcium. Well, think of people that will have a cola with a hamburger or a steak and then have a cup of coffee afterwards. You just killed the calcium in that meal from proper absorption, full assimilation. Alcohol also prevents your bones from absorbing the maximum nutrients from your food, including calcium. Then make sure you're getting vitamin D, because vitamin D helps the body absorb calcium. And if you do eat fish, the safest, healthiest fish to eat are sardines. They're also a rich source of calcium. Exercising creates weight bearing upon the bone, and that helps you have stronger bones. That's the latest in health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come back. Oh, I did mention coconut oil. Just one last thing here. Coconut oil is now able to be shown to fight yeast infections. And that's good. And it also protects your brain, it protects your heart, and it helps you if you have depression. That's all in the scientific literature. In fact, Tufts University has found that coconut oil is highly effective at controlling overgrowth of Candida albicans in this study. And this was published through the American Society of Microbiology journal, M-Sphere. An article entitled "Manipulation of Host Diet to Reduce Gastrointestinal Colonization of the Opportunistic Pathogen Candida Albicans." It was able to reduce it by 40%. That's a big difference. So coconut oil is terrific at killing off yeast and candida. Just take a teaspoon in the morning. That'll make a big difference. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nolm. We're here to talk about the issues that can empower us in our day-to-day lives. And that's important. One of the things we do is we have discussions on issues. And I'm going to throw this issue out. And this is from a person who is a British celebrity who made the observation that she believes that older people are, well, they're taking up space. They don't really serve any major purpose. And her name is Katie Hopkins. And she's making the following suggestion. I'll quote her. I want to get it exactly right. She believes we should have euthanasia vans to drive around and get rid of all the old people. She suggests we create these, drive door to door, and kill off the elderly. Quote, we just have far too many old people. As she's a leading feminist, she says. And then she goes into greater detail about it. And she says you could have music in the vans and the people, you know, would have a final nice few moments. And after all, she argues that we put dogs to sleep, so why shouldn't we put humans to sleep? I'd like to hear your point on that. Is it reasonable, unreasonable? And she seems to be speaking for more than herself on this. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Her name is Katie, K-A-T-I-E, Hopkins, H-O-P-K-I-N-S. And I went over to listen to some of her comments. I went to see her on television in Britain and hear what she had to say and how she was putting her position. So that's that. Now, let us hear from... I want your feedback on this. A young man, as I mentioned, said that he's all pro Clinton and he wanted to go see Bill Clinton at a big event in Las Vegas, but he didn't like the idea that he or his generation should have to do another part of giving the information that could end up in databases being sold or used. That he had financially supported the Clintons and Hillary Clinton's run for president, and that if the Clintons didn't pay attention to this or the Democratic Party, they would lose him supporting and could lose a lot of other young people. Good enough. That's your point of view. What would be your talkback position to this young man? 888-874-4888. I've given you two different topics to share your feedback. Now I want you to hear Chris Hedges in a short talk giving back some opinion about how, well, we are remarkable in some ways, but we're really not that remarkable in other ways, including our living unsustainable fantasies. Listen in, please.
Hi, we're each going to talk for 5 minutes. I guess the Reader's Digest version of our books. My book, Empire of Illusion, The End of Literacy, and The Triumph of Spectacle, makes the argument that we are the most illusioned nation on the planet, that we have become utterly disconnected from who we are, what we represent, and where we're going, and replaced it with fantasy. It has allowed us to run offshore penal colonies where we openly torture other human beings, suspend habeas corpus, engage in warrantless wiretapping and eavesdropping of American civilians, live through a banana republic 2000 election where unfortunately this state contributed to the theft of the Democratic vote, and yet describe ourselves as the greatest democracy on earth, a democracy that abrogates the right to impose its virtues on others by force. We have built a system of unfettered capitalism which has turned everything from human beings to the natural environment into commodities for exploitation until exhaustion or collapse. This has hollowed out America from the inside. It's why we are borrowing roughly at a rate of $2 billion a day from the Chinese and have been for the last 10 years. At some point, that has to collapse. We have destroyed our manufacturing base and described it as an opportunity for growth. All of these things have fed into, I think, a very frightening fantasy about where we're headed, that we have, in many ways, remained 40-year-old children, unable to confront the as the historian, Harvard historian Charles Mayer calls it, that transition from an empire of production to an empire of consumption. Real wages in this country have remained stagnant since 1973, and just as we maintain empire through credit and borrowing, we maintain a lifestyle that we can no longer afford through credit and borrowing. All of that is collapsing. One strives towards a dream, one lives within an illusion. And the illusion that we are fed is that reality is never an impediment to what we want. That we can, if we just dig deep enough within ourselves, if we find our inner strength, if we grasp, as Tony Robbins says, that we are truly exceptional, if we believe that Jesus can perform miracles, if we focus on happiness, we can fulfill this pernicious psychological idea among consumer culture that has sort of instilled massive consumption as a kind of inner compulsion. And the danger of illusion is that it allows you to remain in a state of perpetual childishness, infantilism. And as that gap opens up between the illusion of who we are and the reality, the foreclosures, the bankruptcies that are caused by the inability to pay medical bills, the collapse of empire, we are unprepared emotionally, psychologically, and intellectually for what it is that is about to confront us. And when the wolf finally bays at the door, when our house is foreclosed, when the unemployment insurance runs out, then you react if you have remained in a state of illusion, as a child reacts. You search for a demagogue or a savior who promises moral renewal, vengeance, and new glory. And we can already see that very frightening psychological disease leaping up around the fringes of American society. The only way that one can speak about hope is to break free from a non-reality-based belief system, to begin to speak in a new language of humility, to accept a lifestyle which frees itself from profligate consumption and endorses a new simplicity. And then finally, it is not incidental or accidental that the environmental crisis we face is twinned with the economic crisis. It stems from the same disease which is turning everything, human beings, into a commodity, the natural environment into a commodity that we exploit and exhaust until it dies. And either we wake from this illusion or we commit collective suicide.
That was Chris Hedges. Now, let's go to our phones and say hello to John from New York. Hi, John, your turn.
Hi, Gary?
Yes,
Hi, first of all, thank you for your wonderful work. It's always a blessing to hear you and to talk to you. My comment is about that lady from England. I don't remember the name, Hopkins. And I have a suggestion for her policy. Why doesn't she show us how it's done first?
Good.
She could be the first test case. How about that?
All right. Thank you, John.
I'm glad you liked that.
Let's say hello to Julie from Yonkers. Hi, Julie. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Good. It's hard to know what's more frightening about that remark being on the air in England. I thought that England had laws against hate speech. So the fact that somebody even let her on the air to say that is a little bit frightening, that they don't consider, apparently it's not considered hate speech to call for killing a whole class of people.
Not in England, and she's very popular. It wasn't a one-off. I decided to look into her background to see what else she had to say on other issues, and that is relatively mild compared to some of her positions. But she has a large fan base there.
It's interesting because I believe it's the British Parliament or the Scottish Parliament that is just in the last couple of days debating preventing Donald Trump from coming to the country because of his hate speech against Muslims, calling for excluding Muslims from the United States. Here she's talking about excluding seniors from life.
Yes.
And my second thought is, well, this rings very familiar. The Nazis talked about superfluous people and went about exterminating them systematically. And people get to be superfluous when the economy doesn't have jobs for everybody. It's really about the concentration of capital in the hands of a few multinationals, and they don't need all of us. So this is just, she's really talking the kind of trash that Hitler's people talked in justifying assassinating, murdering masses of people. It's very frightening.
Julie, thank you. I appreciate you sharing your views. Anita from Brooklyn. Anita, your turn.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all your comprehensive, in-depth work and your deep study of humanity. I would like to just say that I think it's odd that, first of all, Chelsea Clinton wants to be a hedge fund manager. That says something about her parentage. But also, you know, that's commodifying everything. I wanted to say that when Barack Obama had that huge groundswell and that huge database, when as soon as he got elected, he dropped everyone. They didn't engage those same people in the conversation any longer. I thought that was so bizarre. I thought it was going to be one big Democratic, and, you know, it's like what Roosevelt used to say, make me do it. He needed that those people behind him to push the agenda that he espoused before, you know what I mean? That he espoused when he was trying to get elected and everyone rallied for him. And then, so what will Clinton do? If they're collecting all this database, they'll use it and then just step onto the platform of the presidency and then drop everyone again? You know what I mean?
I don't know what they'll do. I will give you only my opinion, which is worth no more than anyone else's, but I appreciate you calling in, Anita, and sharing yours with us. I want to take one more call, then I'll give you my thoughts, all right? Let's say from Virginia, James. Hi, James. Final caller. Go ahead, please.
Gary, my comment is, I think she's been watching too many Monty Python movies, because they had one movie where they were going around talking about Bring Out the Dead. Maybe she should stop that watching of Monty Python and start thinking serious about how elderly people have wisdom and insights that can help the younger people. That
James,
was my comment.
That's a good comment. And your thought is not so different from Jonathan Swift, who said, no wise man ever wished to be younger. I'll share just a few of my own thoughts on this. First, I can understand where people become so monotheistically limited in their view of life and respect for other people's lives and the contributions they've made during their life. I believe that we all contribute something. Every human being contributes something that we have to step back and take a look to say, I'm wearing shoes someone made. I'm wearing a shirt someone sewed. I'm eating food someone grew. I'm turning on a light someone created. Everything that we use in our life came from someone else. And more often than not, people spent a lifetime mastering that. And more often than not, those people were only too happy to be a part of making our lives better. The idea of this selfish, self-absorbed, narcissistic view of life without looking at all the other people that allowed you to have your life, to grow your life, is limiting. But it's not universal. In Asian countries, the elderly today are still honored and celebrated. It's changing somewhat in Japan and China, but it's still there. In fact, in China, there is the elderly rights law based upon Confucian principles that honor the idea of you deserve all the respect that comes with your age. It's a meditation, and children are expected to visit and spend time with their elderly. And if they don't, that's a violation. And you can be held accountable for not visiting and spending time with your elderly. Now, in the Mediterranean and Latin countries, all the strong family cohesion, the big family, respecting the elders, the older you get, the more you're relied upon as the person who can always look at a problem with a far more balanced perspective because you have the benefit of time. In the United States, not so much. There are certainly individuals who value the elderly and what they have given, the sacrifices they have made, but it's changing rapidly. Many people in the United States today consider the elderly as useless. One reason only, there are many reasons, is of the perverted Protestant ethic that only places value on the ability to work. Hence, the elderly live lonely lives, separated from family, children, and friends in the workplace because they did their work, they're no longer value, and they disappear. We value people by what they produce materially. We do not value people for their wisdom, their insight, their spiritual atonements, and the experience they gain with age. And since the condition of the American elderly is framed as an economic issue, so it is the way they are treated. Billion-dollar industries in the United States to keep elderly locked away and removed from society or medicated. Aging itself is perceived as a disease like lepers, to be avoided. Our views on aging are, in my opinion, skewed towards the toxic and negative. Big Pharma capitalizes on aging through drugs, hence further encapsulating the elderly from side effects. Problems are there, but we do not ask the elderly to engage in their solutions. And we should. We only looked at how much money and resources can be extracted from them. The dominant views of aging exist in denialism about the science of aging and the resilience of the mind. With each generation, views of aging in the elderly further degenerates, worst in the current generation, which is more materialistic. Our infotainment world and work ethic that now commodifies everything about a person is only capable of looking at the elderly as a commodity to generate revenue. Very few legal protections for the elderly. They're often victims of financial and property scams. And still they pay very high property tax even though they live in homes for decades, no longer have children under their care. And that is not uncommon. So these are just some of the reasons that we have this perspective. But England and the United States share that commonality. But it is not everyone. And I find that those of us who are baby boomers, we find it saddened that people would have a perspective. It's almost like Soylent Green, where the character of Edward G. Robinson goes into the center, lays on this table, and then for about 60 seconds is able to see views of nature that no one had seen since the complete destruction of society to ghettos, and sees deers and lakes, and in that few remaining moments before he's euthanized and then turned into a food product. And the question is a society that would entertain that, how long is it before we're considered just the next food product? Now to the other question about the man who got on the internet and was talking about the Clintons. Yes, I would agree with him that we should not have to turn over personal information to go into a lecture or to a public forum to hear someone. But I would like to address his entire generation, everyone under 35 who's thinking of voting for the Clintons. Less egregious is signing your name and address and phone number that you attended, so in some way they might be able to exploit that, than have you taken a careful look at the people that you would give the power to oversee and affect the entire United States and much of the world, its economy, its military, the social order. Let me share a few things that this young man may not know about the Clintons. First off, this is according to the Daily Beast in an editorial, quote, "Face it, a vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for war. Liberals shouldn't kid themselves that the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee is very different from the Republican forerunners on this score. And the rest of us who are appalled at the incalculable human cost of a demonstrably failed bipartisan interventionist foreign policy that has accomplished next to nothing for all of the 21st century can get on with figuring out to how to fight back against persistent war hysteria. Regardless of who gets elected in November, U.S. foreign policy will almost certainly not change very much from the status quo that stokes the global instability while underwriting constitutionally unsound domestic surveillance. It will be heavily militarized, and the Pentagon will get more money than it knows what to do with. It's not just that Hillary Clinton gets high-profile foreign policy guidance from the very same firm that advises hawkish Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, who last year supported increasing the Pentagon budget without cutting other government outlays, nor is it that the First Lady Clinton urged her husband to bomb Serbia in 1999, and as a senator from New York, she supported the invasion and occupation of Iraq without reservation. As Secretary of State, she rarely missed an opportunity to back more and more bigger interventions, and she backed the bold escalation of the Afghanistan war that Mike Crowley in Time wrote, quote, she presses the Obama to arm the Syrian rebels and later endorsed airstrikes against Assad's regime. She backed intervention in Libya, and her State Department helped enable Obama's expansion of lethal drone strikes. In fact, Clinton may have been the administration's most reliable advocate for military action. And that's exactly the reason why Republican John Iran McCain joked in The New Yorker that it would be, quote, a tough choice for him if the presidency came down to Clinton or the liberal-leaning dove Rand Paul. Quote, we came, we saw, we die. He died, Clinton herself joked on CBS News after the death of Muammar Gaddafi, end quote. Now, just as an aside to this young man, do you know anything about Gaddafi? He was a strong man. That didn't make him a nice guy. But it did mean that of all the countries in Africa, his was the most prosperous, the highest levels of education, more women serving in positions of power. You could be anything you wanted as a woman in his country, a medical doctor, school teacher. You could be a member of the parliament. Also, he had shared his wealth with his people. They did not have debt. They were debt-free. They had no unemployment. People used to migrate there from Mali and other countries in Africa because better working standards. If you got married, you got a house, you got a car. If you were sick, you could go anywhere in the world and get medical attention, and no matter what the cost, it was paid for. Your education, paid for. So that's what existed prior to the Clinton, we came, we saw, he died. But imagine putting up on your screen right now, Gaddafi was alive when he was taken, and he had a bayonet, a sword, where he was sodomized with it and died a brutal death. Is that what we represent? He represented no threat, existential or otherwise, to the United States. There were no major terrorists in his country. He was fighting the world terrorism with the United States. His crime was that he had enormous oil, one of the largest, if not the freshwater reserve in the world, and that he actually created. And also he wanted to shift the change exchanging oil to the gold denier and make that the standard throughout Africa. That's why he was gone after. The United States ended up getting his billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in gold. Now go to that country today. It is a hotbed for terrorist activity. There are more than 200 different militias and religious groups who are fighting each other. There is no stability. It is completely destroyed. It looked like Dresden after the bombing in World War II. So think of how many of the refugees now who have no place to live and are going and dying frequently in trips to Gibraltar, to Greece, to Italy. How many of them came from Libya? No responsibility. How many people died there in the Civil War? No one took responsibility. How about the fact that we were using the Benghazi Libya embassy and annex to ship weapons into Syria for the jihadists there to use? That's sponsoring terrorism. That's a crime against humanity. That's Hillary Clinton. That was under her State Department. I recommend you watch the movie, 13 Hours. In my opinion, best movie of the year thus far. Tells the truth about what happened during those 13 hours, all from the point of view of the survivors. It's their story. It's harrowing. And that was Hillary Clinton, because none of those people needed to have died. Additionally, I'm not going to mention any of these sordid sex tales, the repeated rapes by Bill Clinton. Where were the feminists on that? Or the drugs from people who were dealing drugs in the drug capital of America, where they came in, which is mean Arkansas, or the cash-stuffed envelopes of the state police who testified that they gave stuffed envelopes to the governor. That's really secondary. Just look at the Clinton scandals. This is what you're voting for. You think Whitewater would not happen again? The real estate scams, their business venture failing, business partners were jailed, but not the Clintons. In fact, Bill Clinton pardoned them before leaving office. Travelgate, firing the whole White House travel staff in order to put their own friends from Arkansas in place. Hillary was found to be in the center of that. She was for making false statements. And Filegate, access and reading top secret FBI background checks for personal political reasons to use against their enemies. Using her position in the State Department to do foreign policy deals that would financially benefit the Clinton Foundation, Uzbekistan, Russian-Ukrainian company, Alvani Corporation, and the Clinton Foundation scandal distributing useless drugs like placebos to AIDS victims in third world nations. And by the way, the Charity Navigator, the largest raider of charity organizations, refuses to list the Clinton Foundation. And completely out of touch with people who economically struggled. Remember when she said, oh, you know, we were broke, and really? Well, the last time I looked, you own million-dollar homes in Chappaqua and Long Island, and also Embassy Road in Washington, D.C. You fly around private jets, and you make anywhere between $250,000 to $500,000 for a little lecture. Oh, and your name. Yeah, that thing about saying you were named after Sir Edwin Hillary, the first man to climb Mount Everest. A little problem there. He didn't climb Mount Everest till 6 years after you were born. Oh, and you know that thing where you were dodging bullets and running for your life when you got off the... No, footage turned up that you were all happy, no gunfire, you were walking and laughing and smiling. The truth seems to have an awkward way of not showing up with either Clinton. And while working on Watergate, Hillary Clinton was accused by Chief of Staff of the House Judiciary Committee, Jeffrey Zeifman, for filing a fraudulent legal brief and stealing public documents to prevent Richard Nixon from being impeached. And she hoped that Ted Kennedy would be an easy win then in 1976. And flip-flopping, originally you were not for gay marriage, now then you were for gay marriage. It's fine. I support everything gay rights. But why does it happen that when it's in your political favor to do so, you do, and when it's not, you don't? You favored Cuba's embargo. You didn't oppose it until 2014. And consistently identified as neoconservative. She is the most hawkish, pro-war, pro-interventionist, pro-regime change, pro-coup master of any person in the democratic process in the last 50 years. Doubt me? Look at the coups in Paraguay, in Ukraine, in Honduras. Hillary Clinton behind it. In removing the Assad regime in Syria, Hillary Clinton behind it. So her civil rights record is horrible. So any African-American who votes for her, look at her civil rights record first. She voted for the Patriot Act in 2001. She consistently supported the surveillance, the public and social media, and she supported the National Security Agency. She demonized Edward Snowden, and yet she didn't want WikiLeaks to release any documents. And as Secretary of State, she ordered every diplomatic mission to spy on the United Nations, actually spy on them. She lied about her involvement in the Trans-Pacific Partnership in 2012. She called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, quote, the gold standard for trade. I have 54 separate quotes from 54 separate countries where she was promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Cable shows she had directly told her staff to support it in its foreign affairs activities and with other countries. In fact, the National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, commended Hillary on her work on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Did we forget, all of you pro-union people, she was the co-president with her husband, and that created NAFTA and CAFTA and the World Trade Organization. And she was the one responsible, along with her husband, for destroying and repealing the Glass-Steagall Act and the Future Commodities Trading Act. She was essentially responsible for institutionalizing Monsanto and Washington in the State Department. And she was using the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, to conduct audits on persons opposing the Clintons. She targeted Citizens Against Government Waste. She targeted American Spectator, burglarized three times. She targeted the National Center for Public Policy Research and others. And after leaving the White House, they were caught looting its furniture for $200,000. They took everything they could, and they left, a quote, a White House with broken furniture, living spaces full of trash, missing medallions, and doorknobs. Well, they're from Arkansas, I guess, and they could take whatever they wanted. They were the power in Arkansas. And they then sold, according to Judas Wash, air rides on Air Force One, graves at Arlington Cemetery, meetings with administration officials, high-tech export license to China. Plus, of course, now Emailgate. We don't know where that's going. And just remember, when you vote for Hillary, you're also getting Bill. And boy, do you want another Bill. I'll save what I know on Bill for our next program. So to the young man, think well, deeper. Your generation has the capacity to do deep research if you choose to. Now let's say hello to my guest standing by in Milford, Connecticut, Dr. Sin Lee. Nice to have you with us today. Dr. Lee?
Yes, is this Gary?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, this is Sin Lee, right. Yeah.
Thank you for returning to our program. We had you on several years ago when you were performing preliminary studies that indicated Gardasil as a possible cause of death in girls who received the human papilloma vaccine. And you may recall that a former Merck physician and French doctor predicted that Gardasil may turn out to be the greatest medical scandal of all times. And you have investigated the deaths of girls who received the vaccine. And as Christopher Shaw and Lucia Tomlevich at the University of British Columbia, who you know, we're doing research with this, and right now we are witnessing several countries halting or planning to halt under investigation the human papilloma vaccines, and one country is Japan, and you have uncovered the top medical officials on the World Health Organization's Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety made a concerted effort to undermine the Japanese inquiry, and this in turn provides some evidence for a cover-up. Whenever there is a cover-up regarding a drug, a vaccine, or anything else, there's a level of denialism also. Something is being denied that it then requires a hiding of the facts. So speak about what you believe the medical industry, including the World Health Organization and our own CDC and federal health officials, are fundamentally denying about what they know and what they wish to ignore or refuse to know about the dangers of the human papilloma vaccine, including Gardasil.
I did not know the entire history until a friend from New Zealand uncovered this tray of emails and sent to me. Then I analyzed them. I realized that actually a group of people behind the scene already try to undermine the public hearing, which was supposed to be a discussion, scientific debate on the possibility of unsafeness of this vaccine. You know, that's why I wrote it. But why they did this, I don't know. I think that they must have some hidden agenda and a personal interest on the issue.
What have you found out that you can tell this audience about the latest dangers that you've uncovered on the Gardasil or the human papillomavirus vaccines?
I'm not a researcher on this particular problem, and I only did the work when a group of women who believed their daughters were injured by the vaccine and asked me to test the vaccine Gardasil and to see whether there was viral DNA in it, which I found it does contain viral DNA, and combined to aluminum. That may be the cause of all the adverse side effects, including some unexpected death of these vaccineers. So I read extensively on the issue, and combined the publications recently published by other researchers that I come up with the possible mechanism, which is now, I think, has been discussed worldwide. That is what I found. And I'm not
Okay, what is the contaminant, and what are the adverse effects associated with it, and why is the aluminum adjuvant that you just mentioned a greater concern for you with respect to the human papilloma vaccines compared to some of the others that include aluminum?
Right. Now, the others, I don't know, but in Gardasil, I know something about it, you see. In human papillomavirus infection, in the patients, in the natural infected patients, there are no antibodies produced in the body. But yet, you have to inject the Gardasil vaccine, which contains the virus protein, with aluminum. Then you can stimulate the immune response. Aluminum being used as aspirin itself does not increase the immune response. It depends on...
We're having a technical difficulty here. What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to have you on for a longer segment where you can lay out your argument, because your telephone is interrupting and we can't hear you. My guest, Dr. Sin Hang Lee, will reappear with us on our next program to go into greater depth. But he does have some very important information about the cover-up and the dangers of the human papilloma vaccine virus and the aluminum adjuvant, and how there's also, he found, some foreign DNA that we were never told was there, and how those two together are combining, and as he said, leading to some of the deaths and injuries that we're now seeing. And therefore, this vaccine should not be on the market at all, and no one should be forced to take it. It should not be mandatory. But more on this when we have a proper connection with him. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.